Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we like talking about Disney things.
We do.
Specifically, this week is going to be Hercules.
Hercules.
The second time Disney has gone into Greek mythology for one of their movies.
I thought you were going to imply that we had tried to record this podcast previously, and I was like, I don't remember watching Hercules previously. Is this something you did without me and then faked
me with
like a sock puppet and...
No, I'm talking about Fantasia when they did the pastoral sequence.
That makes much more sense.
And we got the, you know, scary demon version of Pegasus instead of the delightful chipper version.
Nuh-uh, we got both scary demon and delightful chipper.
But
we got baby ones. They're so cute.
We did get baby ones, but they were like not, because they said specifically that the scary demon
Pegasus
horse
and his family
was actually Pegasus.
Okay.
Even though he was, you know, had the fire eyes.
The fire eyes. Yep.
Yeah. So Hercules came out June 27th, 1997. It wasn't as successful as previous Disney Renaissance movies, but kind of like, how can you be?
Yeah.
Because it made $99 million domestically and something like $254 worldwide.
Well, that's just not good enough, apparently.
And it's known for being not as successful as the other ones.
Yeah.
I'm like, poor Hercules.
Awkward.
It also, like every Disney movie, takes great liberty with its source material.
A lot.
But, you know, we just watched Hunchback with a Happy Ending and Pocahontas with the stuff that Pocahontas did. So it's not like...
Time period in Disney is not exactly known for the most accurate things. I know a little bit about Greek and Roman mythology, so I'm going to do my best to point out when stuff goes wrong, but I might not be entirely correct. I'll warn you ahead of time.
I know way too much about Greek mythology, so I'm really going to have to curb how many times I point out that they do stuff wrong.
Okay.
Or else this podcast will be 7 to 12 hours long.
Let's not do 7 to 12 hours. I'm going to fall asleep somewhere in that period of time.
but the first thing is that Hercules is the Roman version of the character.
Right.
And every other
Everybody else is Greek. Heracles is his Greek name.
But it's really curious because, like, that wasn't Disney's doing. Like,
no.
That character's always been more famous as Hercules when every other character is more famous as their Greek version.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, like, when Kevin Sorbo was Hercules on TV, he was Hercules and...
In all the Greek stuff.
Zeus and Hera. I went back as...
Maybe people just think it's weird because the Roman versions of everything else are planets.
Yeah.
So they just don't want to use, like, Venus and Mars and stuff because people will be like, that's not a planet. You know, sometimes people are dumb when they're watching movies. Some people would legitimately be concerned that that wasn't a planet. So that's my guess.
And the planets are important in this movie. So,
it's
you know,
true.
maybe that would lead to unnecessary confusion.
And Heracles just sounds weird.
Heracles does sound weird. I mean, I don't think it would if we had grown up knowing it.
I don't know.
Hercules opens up with this majestic, important-sounding narrator.
And museum.
Who is totally Charlton Heston.
Is it really?
It is.
I totally didn't even notice. That's fabulous.
Yes. And he's sounding very majestic and important and talking about how majestic and important this story is. And then he's interrupted by 5 of the 9 muses.
Yes. Do we know which muses those are? I meant to look that up.
They are, hang on, I know it by type, I don't, because I can't remember which names go with which type.
Oh.
But I know it's, comedy, tragedy, poetry, history, and dance.
One of those is Terpsichore, because I always remember that's a weird name. I think it's dance.
Yeah.
If we both kind of think it's dance, then it's totally dance,
it's
and we are now officially
dance.
Experts.
Yep. But one of the reasons that 5 was chosen as the number was because at some point in the production of this, in the early production of this movie, the Spice Girls were considered for the roles of the Muses.
Why did that not happen? That's so crazy. That would be so funny.
It would have been like such a weird, like, specific, this movie was made in the 90s icon bit of it.
Would that be considered a Hercules Spice World crossover movie then? That's amazing. Why did that not happen? I'm kind of disappointed. I was just about to talk about how much I love the Muses. Nope, don't love them as much anymore. If they could have been British and wearing ridiculous platform shoes, I would have loved them more.
I'm sorry. Just know that the somewhere out there in the ethos of never made movies, there's a version where the Spice Girls were the Muses of this movie.
Now that would have been so crazy. That would have made this movie so like dated and not as good to future generations, but it would have been awesome for us.
But yeah, so the Muses, because we have to talk about the Muses a lot, and that sounds
Muses.
Weird to say.
Yeah, it's Muses, go with it.
So the Muses have to they interrupt, and they have to put a cool factor on this story, pretty much.
Well, they're used as a chorus.
They're a Greek chorus.
Greek chorus, so they narrate stuff. And they're a chorus. Get it? It's a joke. Also, gospel. I don't know why. It's delightful, though.
Yeah, so they do this song called Gospel Truth.
Yep.
And it comes in three parts, because it's telling the story.
Yes.
And so they have to keep stopping and letting some of the story happen, and then coming back in.
Yeah.
And stopping again. But the opening is basically tells the story of
a
long, long time ago, these titans were messing everything up, and Zeus came along and put them in jail.
Yep.
Put them in Titan jail.
Titan jail.
I really like these pots, and because the whole story is told through basically the
vases.
Type of art, yes, that would go on vases and. Told mostly in still pictures, but there is a little bit of movement in there.
Yeah.
But kind of the implication is that somebody has painted this entire story.
Painted the whole thing.
One pot at a time.
Yep.
So
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Titans are all introduced, and then it goes back to a little bit of the song, and then it Hercules is born.
Yes.
And we see tiny Hercules, who has these giant, giant arms. Holy crap. His arms are the size of his head. He's such a weird-looking baby.
We got to talk about, like, this is, like, such stylized animation.
It's very swirly.
Especially in comparison to every, like, Aladdin onward up until this point. And, like, even when we watched Lion King, like, they still were really lion-looking lions.
Yeah. This is super stylized. You can especially see it if you watch any scenes with Meg and Hades together, because Hades' neck is like four times the size of Meg's waist.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous. The way like the proportions are done and how it's stylized is really cool, but it's also kind of strange sometimes. Like Meg's hair is a cone with a ponytail hanging off of it. And in this scene, Hercules as a baby has these giant, giant arms.
Yeah. I mean, I really like it, but I remember, like, seeing even the cutouts in the movie theaters way back when and being like, that's a weird-looking fella.
He is kind of funny-looking. It also made it really weird for face characters. I've seen Hercules face characters in pictures once or twice. I don't think I've actually seen them in person, although I don't think I remember that well. And it's an interesting process for especially Hercules because he is so giant. But Meg's hair is just so intense.
We also get a lot of getting to see the other gods who aren't mentioned, but like if you know who they are,
you can recognize them.
This movie is so much fun to pause because they did.
Yeah.
They put in so many little. Like other Greek stories going around in the background.
Yes. I definitely recognized Athena. She had her little owl with her. She was looking pretty grumpy.
Athena has her owl. Aphrodite's there.
Hermes is everywhere.
Yeah, Hermes is like a talking actual character.
Yeah, but they never call him by name, which I thought was interesting.
But he does. He brings flowers at the beginning.
Yeah.
And there's that really famous florist shop that has Hermes as their logo.
It's like an organization of flower shops or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I hope that was intentional. I
see what it was.
I went, also, I can recognize Dionysus there because he's, you know, round and has a goblet.
Yeah, he looks very much like Dionysus from Fantasia, actually.
And I recognize Poseidon because he's like half fish. Yes,
he was sitting with Athena at the same little table, and I was like, that would be an interesting conversation. Yeah.
And there's some throwaway comment about there hasn't been this much love in the room since Narcissus discovered himself,
and there's Narcissus.
And Narcissus has like this metal hanging around his neck that says me on it.
That's what I noticed too. I was like, that metal is the best. He's like holding a mirror and blowing kisses to himself, but he's got this metal and it says me, and it just made my day.
Yeah, I like that one.
It's a christening, basically. We get a Sleeping Beauty scene, essentially. Yes. Down to the you didn't invite me sort of situation.
So we get Pegasus, who is made out of clouds.
Made out of clouds. Zeus makes him for Hercules. It's really cute. Pegasus is really adorable as a baby. He's very chubby.
Yes.
Which is not how baby horses look, but whatever.
I really like that the clouds are so cool up in Olympus because, like, they'll fix your pillars for you.
Everything is made of clouds.
They'll turn into chairs.
Yeah, well, I liked that everything was kind of made of clouds because when they were talking about, like, you can't live with us on Olympus later in the movie, it was like, oh, he can't live with them on Olympus, like, literally cannot physically get there. Because otherwise it just seems like, nope, can't live with us. You're not cool enough.
Well, I don't know, like, what the rule is there because it's like, it's not like he can't, because he does actually hang out there as a human at some point. So it's not like there's some cosmic thing that Zeus can't, you know, remove that is physically blocking Hercules.
Is Olympus like a super snooty country club?
It kind of sounds like it.
Gotta make this much money to live in Olympus.
It sounds like there's a little rule book and a guy going, oh, you're mortal.
I'm sorry.
We have a little earth area for you. So... But I don't know.
But Hades comes in Maleficent style, being like, hey, baby, I'll talk to the baby, sure.
Hades is my favorite.
I really like Hades.
My favorite Disney villain. And he's such a nice contrast to Frollo.
I know, because Frollo is so legitimately scary. Hades is not legitimately scary. Mostly he's just kind of bad at planning.
Well, Hades was like in the original script, Hades was supposed to be like this slow, menacing, dark presence.
Yeah, no.
Until James Woods comes in, and they completely rewrote the script for him.
Totally worth it.
He's doing all these ads, because he did so many ad-libs, and he's so, so good at this character. And apparently, this is like his all-time favorite character that he's ever done.
Good choice.
So every time they need, like, Hades to be on, like, House of Mouse or in Kingdom Hearts, he always comes back to do it, just because he has so much fun being Hades.
Delightful. I did not know that. So they explain Hades a little bit, and we get to see the underworld for the first time, and the underworld is really cool. I love the designs for this, where it's, like, it's very, very creepy, and the painting style is very different from the rest of the movie, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And we get to see some nice, like, underworld stuff. You see him crossing the river Styx, and you see Cerberus, the three-headed dog.
Cerberus.
And we get to meet the Fates.
The Fates are there. Pain and Panic, who are two of four of the demons of torment.
Yes.
That hang out. And so the Fates are there. And I guess he called a meeting with them at some point.
Yeah, we don't see that, but...
but
he did.
The fates are there, and the fates are responsible for
everyone's
cutting the thread of life.
Yeah,
which is basically the thing that brings you to the underworld, that ends a mortal's life.
And there are three sisters.
And they also
in the original
eye.
Isn't it that there are like three women of different ages? Is that a different thing that I'm thinking about?
They're all old. But the whole thing is that they share one eye because they're in Perseus's story.
Am I thinking of some? Maybe I'm thinking of. Is that in Macbeth? There's three women of different ages. The witches? Maybe that's
I
what I'm
don't
thinking
remember.
Of. I don't know.
But that's the whole thing is like the way you get them to. The way you get your information from them
yeah.
is you have to steal their eye.
But I thought really for some it. Reason in the original that it was like a very young woman, a middle-aged woman, and a very old woman.
I mean, there totally might be a version where it's that.
I don't know.
I've never seen. Everything I've seen, they were always.
I'm
old,
probably thinking
crony.
Of some other mythology, or I'm thinking of Macbeth. That's very likely. so yeah, they share an eye between each other, and one can see the past, one can see the present, and one can see the future.
Yeah. And she tells them about indoor plumbing.
Yep. It's going to be
so,
big.
So
but
nice.
Then like 10 seconds later, they're like, oh, can't tell you about the future. That's off limits. And I was like, you just talked to him about indoor plumbing. He's immortal. He'll get to see indoor plumbing. That's total spoilers.
Well, Hades, like the green one who I don't know. They never say which fate
which
is,
one is
which one.
Yeah.
But the green one is all goo-goo over Hades.
He is.
And so he basically charms his way into getting to know what's going to happen. And yeah. So every time they're making a prediction, they do it in verse, which is, it's really great how much this bothers Hades.
He's like, oh, great. It's going to be poetry. Yep.
And so I memorized this whole thing as a kid.
That's really so. Dorky, Joel.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Yeah,
but I could still do it even when I was watching this time. I was like, 18 years. Super, I know this. I know exactly what's going on.
That's
but
really
basically, the planets are going to line up in 18 years, and that'll provide the opportune moment to release the Titans and take over Olympus, which is Hades' whole plan. But if Hercules is fighting in the battle, then it will turn the tides and Hades will fail.
Yes.
So Hades devises a plan that he has some Grecian formula.
Yep.
Which will turn a god into a mortal. And
yep.
So Pain and Panic are tasked with turning Hercules, kidnapping Hercules,
kidnapping
then turning
Hercules,
immortal,
turning
then
immortal,
him.
And then killing him. Yeah, it seems awful complicated to give to this person.
So, well, they do the first part very successfully.
Yes.
They sneak up and they take Hercules away, and then they are giving him the formula, but he does not drink the very last drop.
Yep.
And so, because of that,
still
he does not
his
lose
strength.
His strength.
Yes.
And so, but the reason that he doesn't drink the last drop is that they are interrupted by the people who will become Hercules' adoptive parents.
Yeah.
Amphitryon, and I do not remember what the wife's name is.
I don't remember. You got more than I did, so that's good.
But well, I did not notice this ever before until this time, but they look significantly younger in this first shot than they do in the rest of the movie.
Of course they do, because he's a baby.
I know that. I know that. I don't know why I never noticed that before.
That's really weird, Joel.
But it's, you know, like, specifically his beard is changed and her hair is grayer. And so
yeah,
like,
they look older.
So, cool. And so, but Pain and Panic, They're able to shapeshift, by the way. That's established pretty early on in the movie. But they turn into giant snakes in order to kill Hercules. This is a reference to
Hera.
In the original myths, Hera sending
serpents.
Two snakes to kill Hercules in the crib.
Yep.
And Hercules beating them up.
My favorite part of this movie
strong.
Is Hera being a loving mother to Hercules. Like, really? You're going to go with that? Okay. You do that.
Hera, who is like the original evil stepmother.
It's true. Like,
the evil stepmother to end all evil stepmothers is this.
She has that like
kind,
weird,
and loving.
It's so,
and
it's
pink.
So strange. She has that weird like complex where she doesn't get angry at her husband for cheating on her. Instead, she gets angry at the people he cheated on her with and their children. And I'm like, shouldn't you be more angry like at Zeus? I mean, I know there's nothing you can do to him, but you could at least like not talk to him for a while.
Yeah. Like, she can basically pout.
Yeah.
And she can only pout for so long, and they're immortal, so it's like, he has the time
might
to wait
as well
her out.
Kill your mortal lovers and children, whatever. Yeah.
So, Hercules is taken in by this loving couple.
They were adorable.
And he is, you know, he grows up, and we find out about all this via Potts.
Pots.
Lots and lots of pots.
Lots of pots. Yep.
And so, and I really like that one of the pots, and because this is where we go back and the muses tell us this part of the story, and one of the pots that they use just has sheep on it. It's just some sheep that Hercules is about to run by in a few seconds. And I'm like, who needed
to draw all their sheep?
But somebody had to this needs to be cemented
sheep
in the storytelling immortality.
It's very important.
These sheep. And so,
yeah,
they do. But yeah, so Hercules is, I guess, a teenager at this point. And so he's basically, they're going into town to him and Amphitryon to sell some hay. Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes into town, and everybody's clearly, not comfortable around Hercules. He, tries and help this guy lift a pot, and this guy is like, no, you should really go over there and stand quietly. Mm-hmm. And then we get to see why, because this guy throws a... Well, he throws a frisbee. He throws a discus, is what it's supposed to be. It's a frisbee.
First of all, they don't want to deal with Hercules either.
Right.
And so they tell him, there's this whole little bit where they tell him that they have five people when they have three people. But they hold up four fingers to represent the three people that they're calling five people.
And then they say that they want an even number.
Right.
And Hercules kind of sees that. He's like, but five isn't. And they're like, nope, can't do it. Nope, not today. But yeah, they throw this discus, and Hercules catches it, and he runs into a pillar. And then the pillar starts to fall, and then the pillar hits another pillar, and there's this domino step, and all the roof falls apart, really easily. I don't know why. It looks like they made their roof out of golden grams. And really red golden grams that have all fall apart. It's really bad.
I mean, Hercules is the average kid who's still, you know, kind of clumsy at that age.
And awkward.
He's not in control of his, you know, emotions entirely. And happens to be insanely strong.
It reminds me a lot of how Superman is often portrayed when he's young. Like, you know, basically just doesn't know his own strength.
Right.
And doesn't know how to do anything about it either.
So.
And then they basically get kicked out of town.
Yes.
I felt really bad for his dad. you can't trade your stuff here anymore. Well, I guess we'll just go starve to death. Okay.
Well, so he tries to be really nice to Hercules.
He does.
And this is a thing where it's like, it's really kind of heartbreaking because I understand his position and I understand Hercules' position.
Yeah.
And nobody's being unreasonable here.
But it's so it's just awkward and sad.
Sad circumstances. And while you're doing all this, you start to notice that Hercules has the most giant feet that have ever been drawn on a person.
I totally realized the same thing at about here where I was like, what? They're huge.
It's because, he's standing right beside his dad, and their feet are right next to each other, and they're the same height, and they're pretty much the same width, and Hercules is wearing these massive, massive sandals.
It's huge. It's like boats, what? Boat feet.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
And this is where the first bit of I Can Go the Distance comes in.
I like this song. It's really nice.
I mean, it's a very nice I wish song. It really submits that for the whole movie.
It gets stuck in my head really easily, too.
Yeah. The singer here, Hercules' singing voice is Roger Bart, who he more went on to be Broadway famous than movie famous.
Okay, because you said that name like I was supposed to know it, and I was like, yeah, no. I got nothing.
He was Carmen Gia in The Producers. The director's assistant.
Yeah.
And he will pop up a lot in very minor roles, but yeah, on Broadway he's done a lot of, like, he was the lead in Young Frankenstein.
Oh.
He was Snoopy in the Good Man Charlie Brown revival.
Okay, that's cool.
He was in the original cast of Frogs with Nathan Lane, so, like, yeah, he's kind of big deal over there.
Yeah, he is.
But when Hercules comes home, his parents then reveal to him that, I guess they're revealing to him that he's adopted at that point. And in addition to that, when they found him, he had this
medal.
Yeah, the symbol of the gods.
I really like most of his relationship with his parents in this movie. I like that they're clearly really loving people that are trying to do the best for him. I like that they waited a really long time and just couldn't have children. And so it was really exciting and important for them to find this child. And I like that when he decides to leave to, find his biological parents and just, you know, seek his fortune sort of thing, that they're really supporting. But the fact that they're like, we didn't tell you this all of these years because of reasons drives me crazy. Like, that's stupid. Nobody does that.
I don't have an answer to that. Like, that just seems
even really, like, a reason for that to happen in the movie. Like, they totally could have just told him that and him be like, you know what, I'm going to go figure out what this is all about now because I'm a teenager and I can, like, function as a person on my own. Like, that totally still would have made sense.
I don't understand how it doesn't come up when, like, he's about 5 or 6 and nearly kills a local child at playgroup.
or accidentally kills some sort of animal. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. But, I'm also, like, sidebar, it's really odd to me that at this point they are such a struggling family because they have Hercules and it feels like he could get all the chores done no problem and still have time to, like, go and kill boar with his bare hands.
No.
They never starve.
This is why they are struggling as a family. Did you see the havoc that Hercules just wrought? Who do you think has to pay for that? Somebody has to, and Hercules doesn't have income. So they're pretty much just covering Hercules' problems. Yeah, as much as he can help, he's doing just as much money-paying damage.
Well, the thing is, like, you brought up Superman, and there's a whole thing in newer Superman stuff where they make a big deal about, like, the Kent family can't prosper off of Superman abilities because
he's in hiding.
You know, they can't. Yeah, but I'm like, everybody knows Hercules is Supermondo strong. Like,
it's true. No, I think it's because they keep having to pay for all his stuff.
So, just daily problems.
I think that makes logical sense.
Yeah, it works for me. I mean, but so Hercules heads off to the Temple of Zeus, mm-hmm. where Zeus comes to life.
Hey, Zeus.
And so,
I really like Zeus in this movie. He's so giant and jolly. He reminds me a lot of the Ghost of Christmas Present from the Muppet Christmas Carol.
I can see that.
Giant beard, huge dude.
Zeus is voiced by Rip Torn, and so, who also,
really?
Like,
that's really funny.
And Rip Torn does a lot of, like, really silly sitcom guest appearances things. And so he always does this, like, just jolly fellow and some... I really like it.
That's delightful.
I also really like how very straightforward Zeus is here.
Yeah, he's like, you really can't come home because you gotta be a god. But we really like you a lot. And you look good, kid.
He's like, you prayed for this. Here's your answers. A, B, C. 1, 2, 3. Here you go.
Yep. Here's your path.
Any more questions? I'm right here in the temple. Anytime you need it. And so, like, look at him being helpful.
Yep.
Instead of having to, and he still doesn't, you know, he doesn't exactly tell, like, oh, here's how a true hero works.
Yeah. And, he's like, you know, you gotta figure this out for yourself, but here's how you do it.
So there's gotta be the whole, like, you had the power to go home the whole time. Thanks, Glinda. Kind of thing. Like, there has to be a little bit in there.
Seriously.
But all in all, he's pretty good about being like,
it's true.
Step one is go find Phil.
For a mystic guide. He's pretty good. And he gets Pegasus back.
Yes, he brings back Pegasus, who's also grown up.
Yep.
But that's nice. And they head off to find Philoctetes, who is Phil. Who is a satyr.
Yes.
Which is half man, half goat, and very short, and Danny DeVito.
It's really apt. I'm pretty sure this is the most apt role Danny DeVito has ever played. Yep. He's short and hairy. It's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Like every other Danny DeVito character.
Well, yeah, but this one didn't even have to be short and hairy.
Well, apparently, like, when they recorded Danny DeVito, they realized that he has very different mouth shapes than most other people. And so they had to, like, do a lot of reanimation on Phil to make his mouth work with the way he was saying things.
Interesting. I did not know that.
So...
I don't know
how your mouth moves differently, but it does.
I don't know.
But so, first of all, Phil refuses to.
Yes.
He's retired, and he shows him
all the heroes that he's trained.
Lots of yeses.
Yep.
Which is my favorite bit in this. This I thought was so cool as a kid. Like watching it for the first time, because this is like one of the earliest things I remember, like getting the inside joke and nobody else getting it. So when Hercules walks in, he bangs his head on the mast of the Argo.
Yeah.
And so Jason, who, you know, is the captain of the Argo, he was killed when part of the mast hits him in the head.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's because, and everybody else in there was like, meh, whatever. Head bumping joke.
We see what you did there, Disney. So he sings the song. Oh man, what's this song called?
One Last Hope.
One Last Hope. Okay.
So, well, the song starts because Hercules says he has to get trained because
Zeus was his dad.
Zeus is dead. And Phil
doesn't
believe
him.
And
I'm like,
and that's the most believable thing in this whole movie.
Like, half of Greece at this point is Zeus's kid.
Like, that's what Zeus is known for, is having these extra kids all around.
All around kids. Greece. But apparently, in this universe, he's a loving and devoted husband, so he can't have all these kids.
So clearly, like, yeah, when he has a wonderful relationship with Hera.
I guess he just have normal amounts of kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if Hercules has any brothers and sisters in this universe. It seems like maybe not. In reality, he would have had like a billion half-brothers and sisters.
Billion half-brothers, yeah. And so this is kind of a training montage.
There's a Karate Kid scene. It's the best.
Yes, nice Karate Kid scene. A nice scene where they're in the snow and Pegasus has pink earmuffs on.
Yeah,
and there's also
stylish.
There's also this doll that is serving as the damsel in distress.
Oh, that poor doll! It gets so beaten up.
It loses three arms throughout this song.
Does it? I didn't even notice.
It loses three arms and has one arm left at the end of the song, and so I'm like, that doll.
Maybe it was a four-armed lady. Don't discriminate, Joel. Four-armed people are people, too.
This is also where the character design of Hercules changes from the scrawny
awkward,
version.
Awkward, gawky teenager to dude.
Yeah.
Full-grown man, dude.
I don't know how much this is supposed to imply time passing and how much just, like,
giantness.
He did push-ups.
I think it's supposed to be a considerable amount of time. I mean, I think it's supposed to be at least a couple of years, I would hazard to guess.
So that's a long time to just be on an island with Phil.
Oh, God.
So.
And maybe some nymphs. There were some nymphs earlier.
Yeah, lots of nymphs.
There's hope for other people to talk to.
I think that's like one of Phil's training things. It's like, go catch me a nymph.
Maybe, which is a little disturbing. Yep.
But after he passes his final test, they're going to Thebes.
Thebes.
Which is called the Big Olive, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is funny. That's the other thing. In addition to all the awesome Greek things, like other Greek mythology things that are stuck in the background, all the modernized things.
New York City things.
Made into, that fit into the Greek version.
My favorite there was like a hot dog cart and instead it had pitas and I was like, yeah. There's a lot of really like not funny Greek jokes about pitas. There's a lot of references to pitas in this movie.
That's like the only thing you know because we didn't know about shawarma yet.
Shawarma, delicious.
But on the way, we hear a scream. So there's a damsel in distress and Hercules has to go save her and it's Meg. Meg is such a cool character.
I really like her.
Especially
in comparison to other ladies in general. She's got really like deriving forces behind all of her actions, which I think is really interesting. And she's very jaded and untrusting, which is very different from a lot of the female characters we've had previously.
I guess it's going to sound bad to say, but she's like an experienced character.
Yeah.
She's not a character who would be like,
want to leave this tower sort of nonsense. Like, she's like, no, I've been out of the tower. You don't want to go out of the tower. I'm good, thanks.
She doesn't have any animal friends.
It's like, true.
She's not like,
is more of a Disney princess than Megara is.
Yes. She doesn't have that like, oh, I just need a small corner and a dry fire to lay my head.
She's like, no, let's do something entirely different from that, please.
Yeah. And so I like that she's introduced in this like, yes, I'm a damsel. I'm in distress. I can take care of myself. Whatever.
Although that proves pretty unsatisfactory. She's not exactly great at taking care of herself.
No. But I do like that she makes this face when Hercules insists on saving her and not doing a very good job of it initially. And she just has the most bored look on her face.
Yep. She's just kind of over it.
Yep. But after Hercules defeats Nessus, Hercules in the mythology also has some problems with centaurs, by the way.
Yeah.
Especially River Guardian centaurs.
Yeah.
So I like that he got to beat him up so thoroughly here.
Yep.
But Meg is like really in control of the situation.
Yep.
Like fast talking, smooth talking, and Hercules is so like
awkward,
simple, naive farm boy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so
again, it reminds me a lot of Lois and Clark's relationship in Superman, because Lois is like, I'm gonna go write this story and you can bubble along behind if you want, but okay.
Yeah. And so but after they leave Meg behind, we learn that Meg is in under some contract with Hades
recruiting.
Yes. And so her job there was to recruit the River Guardian for the eventual uprising.
Yep.
Which she failed. But she failed because of Hercules. And this is where Hades finds out that Hercules was not killed.
Dun, dun, dun.
He thought it happened.
Pain and panic are in for some trouble.
But since he's mortal, they convince Hades that there's still time to kill him.
Yeah, we can still kill him.
Yeah. Just hang on a second.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is where we get Thebes is New York.
Yes.
And there's like a little I'm walking here, midnight cowboy kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a guy who is offering to sell knockoff sundials.
Oh, yep.
There's this guy who has to like turn this pot back and forth that has stop and go on it.
I love that little part.
Oh, what a sad job.
I know, right?
And we also were introduced to this group of complainers. Group.
Yeah, of people who whine. Essentially, that's their job in this movie, which is so funny to me. And they are sitting around this, like,
It's a fountain.
Fountain thing?
They're gathering water. And it's like just it's supposed to be just the local watering hole where they,
like, literally. You know,
yeah, come to gossip. But they have such pitiful ways of trying to gather water.
And they're talking about how terrible things are. Some stuff got set on fire and there was an earthquake. And Hercules comes over and he's like, I'm here to help. And they're all like, yeah, sure.
He's just another chariot chaser.
Yep.
Is when
Meg comes running in.
Yes.
And she says that there was a landslide.
I really like this scene because Meg is basically faking a damsel in distress act.
Yeah.
But, like, she has to do it for 30 seconds and she just can't hold it together for 30 seconds because halfway through she starts being condescending to Hercules.
Yep.
So that's my favorite part about her. It's like she has this...
She's very, like, genuine in her snarkiness.
There's been a supposed
landslide, and there's some kids trapped. So Hercules goes, and he moves a boulder, and he saves these kids.
These kids, they're shouting out things, you know, help and go get help. And one of them yells out, call IXII, which is 911. In Roman numerals.
I love that so much.
The crowd is kind of applauding Hercules. They're not easily impressed.
No.
But
then the kids get away and you see them transform into Pain and Panic. And Hades is like, well, it's time for the real show. And this monster thing comes in. Is it supposed to be a Hydra?
It's the Hydra, yeah.
Okay.
And what's really cool is it's really subtle, but the cave that the Hydra comes out of was being blocked by the giant boulder.
Oh, so that's Hercules
moves the boulder to free the Hydra.
Huh.
So it makes it seem like there's an actual plan here.
Yeah, plan. Cool.
So
you know, the whole deal with the Hydra is that when you cut off one head, a bunch of heads grow in its place.
Three in this version. And so, also, the Hydra is, like, was done in 3D rendering, and a lot of computer work was done with the Hydra.
It's kind of obvious. It doesn't look terrible, but there is, like, when you watch it, it looks different and a little odd.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was, like, really cool the first time, because... And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, look, it's clearly done with computers, but now look what we can do with computers.
Yeah.
But now that we can do more with computers, it does feel a little
dated.
Yeah, it's like, oh, because it doesn't... It's so clearly different than the rest of the animation. I don't have a problem with it.
Neither do I. Know. I mean, it's not, like, terrible. Just looking back at it now, I'm like, that's a lot less impressive than I remember it.
Yeah. Apparently it took 6 to 14 hours to render every single frame of the Hydra, depending on how many heads it currently had.
Well, which, now I feel, like, super bad for anything I have said about it. It's perfect and nothing should ever be changed about it, because geez. Nope.
But it is like, but no, at the time I was like, what? Look at that and the it can do that and look at the curves and the
yeah,
I was impressed. I was incredibly impressed by the Hydra watching it in the theater, and I remember the scene and seeing him come out and being like, oh, that's cool singing.
Yeah,
But yeah, Hercules is not deterred by the fact that every time he cuts off a head, three more grow in its place.
No, he just keeps going.
Until there's, you know, a couple dozen heads hanging out, looking at him.
Yep, just chilling.
And so he eventually basically crumbles a cliffside onto the Hydra to beat it.
Yep. And then they think he's dead, but then he's not dead, because it's the middle of the movie and he's the main character.
And also, this Phil is Disney. Phil is cheering him on, and Phil cheers out, "You won by a landslide."
Oh, I totally like, didn't know that. That's so terrible.
It's a pun.
It's a pun. Get it?
And so, this is where
Zero to Hero is next.
Zero to Hero comes in. This song makes so many references to 12 Labors of Hercules.
Yes, it does.
Nemean Lion's in there, which is the first labor. The boar he beats up, yes. Which is, I think, the fourth.
The thingy.
Stables are sixth. Stables are fifth. Bird is sixth.
There's a mention of the stables, but we never see it.
Hmm?
There's a mention of the stables. Phil mentions it in his planning.
The Hydra is the second one. So
yes.
I think we get at least half of the labors at some point in this movie.
I think so.
Hercules is basically super successful. Kind of big celebrity.
He's got his own Gatorade, basically. And he's got
Air Jordans, which are Air Hercs,
like sneakers and sandals.
He's got action figures.
Yep. He's got his own
like workout DVD, which is a workout scroll.
His action figures have magical pec action.
So it's fun and entertaining. And meanwhile, Hades is just getting more and more frustrated with his inability to do anything.
My favorite thing about Hades' character design is that when he gets angry, more of him catches on fire. That's my favorite thing. Aww. So funny.
And so, when we end the song and come back, Hades is kind of just seething and destroying Hercules' merchandise to vent his anger. But in this scene, he realizes, he gets the idea that he can use Meg as an inside agent.
Yeah.
And if he can find out Hercules' weakness, he's running out of time, because the planet, we've been seeing the planets get closer and closer aligned throughout the movie.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be, he's got like a day, basically, to figure it out now.
He's got like a day, maybe day plus, but it is very, very soon. And so while this is going on, Hercules is busy talking to Zeus, telling him about his latest triumph in the Zeus temple.
Yep.
The local Zeus temple. But because he's, you know, he's not a true hero yet, according to whatever the mysterious
whatever
thing
arbitrary
is.
Whatever rules there are.
Yeah. And so he gets really frustrated and, you know, slams his fist down and punches two holes in the floor. And I remember oh, Hercules, the heroes do not vandalize temples of major deities. That is not a very honorable thing to do.
Maybe that's why he's not in yet.
Because he doesn't take care of the local the local things that he trashes.
It's not paying respect to the existing gods. Can't be a god if you don't like other gods. That's a lie.
That is completely untrue.
That was a terrible statement on my part. Okay, moving on.
Next up is this scene where,
like,
he's posing for a vase.
Things.
And
he's
posing
Scar.
For this vase. And the Nemean lion is Scar.
Yep.
And so he's wearing it, and then he gets frustrated. So he won't stop moving. And he frustrates the vase painter to giving up. This is also where Phil mentions, because Phil's reading off this list, and so he mentions something about the Aegean
stables.
And he has to go get a girdle from some Amazons,
yes.
Which is the ninth labor. And so, but yeah, but he gets frustrated and he throws the lion hood thing to the ground. And so yeah. I'm like, Scar does That's make a very nice throw rug. Yep. Zazu was right.
Oh, so clever.
It only took a couple movies, but yeah. Yep. And so Phil, you know, makes him feel better. He's doing good. He's just got to be patient.
Yep.
And yeah, this is when the fangirls attack. So
I love the fangirls.
They're, you know, basically accosting Hercules. And so I do like that they have a plaque to, attack plan beta or escape plan beta.
Yes.
Which means that there are multiple escape plans for the many scenarios where Hercules finds himself.
It's true.
With fangirls.
So as the girls run out, Meg is like just behind the door and she finds him hiding behind a curtain. And I love the way they animated his feet, which sounds really strange, but you just see his feet first because it's under a curtain, but his feet are like, he's like, just like, you know, tapping his feet and curling and uncurling his toes. Like he, you know, people do when they're nervous, and it's just a nice little bit of animation that made me laugh.
He's kind of hiding there. So Meg is basically playing it very cool because she's yes. very, very apt at that. But she plays with this little action figure thing of Phil, which I guess means that they have also made Phil and presumably Pegasus action figures, so you can like complete the whole set.
Yeah.
With your Hercules action figure. I'm like, oh, the Phil action figure is probably like the sad action figure that none of the kids want.
Aww.
It's like when you want a Ninja Turtle action figure and you open up your present and it's a Rocksteady action figure.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. Thank you.
Awkward.
And so, like, I was like, oh, there's poor Greek kids who got the Phil action figure when they wanted the Hercules Pegasus combo set.
Yeah.
And so, but I really also like so Meg's plan to play hooky with yeah. Hercules is sneak out the back door around the dumbbells. You lift up the back wall.
Yeah. That was my favorite
so nonchalant.
Yep. It's true.
So, but then we cut to the end of the day and they've had this wonderful day
doing something.
They went to see Oedipus Rex.
Oh yeah, there was mention of going to see a play. Which is funny.
And this is the best example in any movie of a joke for parents that like has no bearing on the plot and kids yeah. will never get and never know that they missed a joke.
Yep.
And so, but he mentions like that play about Oedipus, and I thought I had problems.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's the best joke.
Yep.
But yeah, Pain and Panic sneak in via bird form.
Yes.
And tell Meg to stop messing around and get with the program, find Hercules' weakness.
So she tries to ask him, but there's nothing really that he has.
So she fakes weak ankles and was like, that's my weakness. What's your weakness? And so her like lists of things that it could be, one of them is trick knees. And I was like, what if it was trick knees? What if like, he's like, I actually do have this little bum knee that, you know, acts up when the weather's going around. Like, what would Hades do with that plan?
And like, if it hasn't affected him thus far, chances are it's not going to affect him now.
So I don't know where how trick knees would help.
If you press my belly button in this certain way, I will implode, then yeah, that would be useful. But other things are just, like, not really that helpful in the long run.
But, yeah, Hercules has no problems. Nope. He's practically perfect in every way.
Mary Poppins style. So
this is where, like, he's just being really nice, and Meg cannot withstand his super charm. And yep. They come, you know, real close. It's the classic Disney of coming super, super close to kissing, and Phil is the one that interrupts with his Pegasus copter.
The Pegasus counter is so amazing. Okay, so Pegasus has his wings, like, folded up into each other, so they spin around like a helicopter, and he's got this little box on his head with a candle in it, like a spotlight, and it's so dumb, and he looks so angry. Oh.
I really like, there's this whole thing, we haven't mentioned it yet, but there's this whole thing that Pegasus does not like Meg.
No. No, he doesn't. And so, he's jealous.
And so he gives Meg this angry look.
All the time.
And so she has to just deal with angry eyes from the horse.
Yep.
And she always gives them right back. That's
It's true.
So it's an entertaining relationship.
Hercules gets hauled off to go train or whatever.
Yeah. Punishment training, basically.
Punishment training. You went on a date, must punish.
Well, he skipped out on stables and Amazon women, so.
But Phil falls off Pegasus on their way out.
Yes.
Which is really important because after I Won't Say I'm in Love, which is Darling, we should talk about that first, actually.
So, yeah, I Won't Say I'm in Love is an incredibly popular song.
It's a really good
but
one.
But for good reason. And it's a really good, it's like, the only way I can describe it is it's a not love song.
Yeah, it's not like a ballad or Sam said it reminded him of Grease, like the musical Grease, which I can kind of see.
Yeah,
it's got that same sort of like doo-woppy feel to it.
Yeah, but like, I mean, obviously the lyrics are about not being in love, or at least Meg's are. But yeah. Like, even the feel of it is different than the, you know, I'm wishing and Once Upon a Dream kind of like love songs. And
romantic.
This is a not love song. And so I'm like, this one and that song Iago sings in Return of Jafar, Forget About Love. Like,
they're love and denial songs.
Yeah.
Basically.
And so, but I do really like this song.
I really like the song too. It's a good one.
And
it suits Meg really well.
It does.
And
that's the thing, is like, a love song would almost undermine this character.
Right.
And everything you've built up around it till now. And so this is a picture-perfect way to convey the character is in love and to convey the emotions and conflict that this character is feeling. And do it all in a fun song, and the muses get to come back.
Yeah, muses.
And so the more you put them in this movie, the better it is.
It's true.
So.
But
yeah, then Hades interrupts.
And Phil wakes up and hears her talking to Hades about plans.
Yeah. So she basically is in the process of telling Hades that she will not help him out. He's on his own. But Phil hears this one very specific part where Hades says, if I say, I want Wonder Breath's head on a platter, you say, medium or well done.
Yeah.
And she says the medium or well done part, which conveys to Phil that she's working for Hades.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't see where in the context of the conversation she would volunteer the rest of this statement.
Exactly.
And I guess she was supposed to be saying it sarcastically, but it doesn't come across that way. And yeah. I'm like, it's weird that she would, every other thing she would say.
Yeah.
Would, you know, is just so in contrary to the one thing.
Yeah.
And I know it has to be that way for the plot and blah, 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 blah.
But it seems odd.
Yeah. But yeah, throughout that, Phil learns that Meg is in cahoots. And Hades also realizes that Meg's in love with Hercules, and Hercules love Meg, and he's like, there you go, weakness, problem solved.
Yep.
And so Phil tries to come and tell Hercules what's going on. Hercules is having so much fun being in love, he won't listen.
Nope.
And this is a really uncomfortable scene.
I know.
And I feel so bad for everybody in this scene.
Me too.
Meanwhile, Pain and Panic have turned into a lady horse to woo Pegasus.
No, no, they have not just turned into a lady horse. They have turned into a sexy My Little Pony. That is what that is. It's a horse, it's giving Pegasus bedroom eyes, and it's pink and it's got a heart on its butt. That is a sexy My Little Pony.
But then it comes apart, and this is the most terrifying transformation.
It's so creepy.
And part of the reason, and like, I figured this out, like, through pausing and watching this transformation, is that the horse version has, like, these, you know, long, flowy eyelashes, yeah, eyelid kind of things. And Panic, who's the front part of the horse, does not. And so one of the things that disappears right away is the eyelids and eyelashes of this horse. And so there's these crazy eyes on the horse.
And then it splits in two, and it just... it spirals into creepy central. I feel really bad for Pegasus because this is like lifelong emotional scarring right here.
Pegasus reacts appropriately.
Yep. Meanwhile, Hades shows up and basically says that if Hercules doesn't give him his strength for a day, then he's got Meg or whatever. I don't know what he's going to do or kill her, I guess.
This is my favorite Hades scene. This is like where he's at his best at being wheeling the fast-talking salesman, yeah, kind of guy. So he's talking, you know, just this rapid talking. And he has, yeah, he reveals that he has Meg. You have to give up your strength for a day.
Right.
And Meg is free. And he promises that Meg can't be hurt.
Right.
And Hercules is thinking about it. And in Hades' rapid talking fire, he's basically saying, you know, I need this now because the planets have aligned. He's got to go free the Titans. He's like, and it's now. I really don't have time to do it. I've got plans for August. And so he's just, you know, he's wheeling to him and he convinces Hercules. And so they do this handshake thing. And for some reason, this is such a cool shot. It's like, it's the lighting in this shot is weird, but it's really cool. And it really does convey, I guess, that Hercules is being drained of his powers.
Yeah.
And so, but I like this transformation, and I like that Hercules kind of, like, stumbles around for a little bit and is not comfortable or familiar with walking around
being a person
with this level of strength. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's used to having strength, and so, like, he has to move his feet differently, and it's, you know, it's like being on a different planet. And so, yeah, this is where Hades basically reveals that Meg was working for him the whole time. Sneaky. Hercules feels betrayed.
Yep.
Meg feels bad. And if Meg were cool, at this moment she would stub her toe and get Hercules' powers back right away. Because it would negate the no harm will come to her part of the clause. So, but... they don't, because story has to happen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Hades goes and releases the Titans now.
Yep.
I really like the character design on the Titans.
Especially,
like, the four elemental Titans, the lava, fire, rock, and wind.
Yeah.
And so they're just, it's really cool, really different designs on them. They're really, like, individualized. But they're all very cool.
I wrote them down because I was like, I gotta remember all these dudes. Okay, so there's a rock guy who kind of looks like lava rocks.
Yeah, he has two heads.
There's a lava guy.
Ice guy, who's like really big and skeletal, kind of.
Yeah, he looks like a giant angry snowflake. And there's... that's like the girliest way to describe him, but that's what I thought of.
I was like, walking, living, skeleton.
Yeah, snowflake. There's a lava guy. He's like all lava melty. And then there's a tornado guy.
Yeah, the wind titan is made of tornado.
Yep.
And there's a cyclops who we'll get to in a minute.
But I just really love this little scene where they get out and they're all creepy and they're slinking off to go kill Zeus. And Hades is like, guys, Olympus is that way. And there's like clearly this giant mountain Olympus sitting right there. And they're like, okay, and they just turn around.
There's like half a second, and so they're all yelling. This Zeus kind of yell,
"Melt Zeus
to vengeance!" Yep. And so there's this pause of like, okay, Zeus. They're just not deterred. This scene, still to this day, like cracks me up to the point of needing to pause the movie.
It's it's so good.
It might be like my single favorite joke in all of Disney.
That's pretty impressive claim there.
I know, but it's so funny every time, every single bit about it, because like there's even this like great dramatic music build up that that Hades has to stop, and like it's everything funny. But meanwhile, he sends the Cyclops on a different mission to go and kill Hercules, take care of Hercules once and for all. Is bad idea, because that's involving Hercules in the fight. I would have just like hope I defeated his emotions and hoped he sat on a step.
Yep.
I would not have risked
like
by, you know, accidentally getting him involved in a Titan fight.
No. So the Cyclops shows up and Hercules is like, you know what, I'm just gonna go fight it because, you know, it's my fault, it's here essentially, so
yeah. He still has honor.
And Meg's like, that's a terrible plan, and I'm like, I'm with Meg. This is a bad plan. Let's not fight the big thing when you have no powers. But eventually Hercules manages to like trip it into a gorge essentially.
So there's I also noticed this for the first time. When the Cyclops is just like ransacking Thebes, there's a Wilhelm scream in the crowd.
Is there? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I was like, because I always get entertained by the Wilhelm. Meanwhile, on Olympus, all the Titans have pretty successfully taken, like, the gods are not very good at fighting. And I'm guessing they just have not fought in a long time. I'm really curious, like, because when the Titans were freed, the planets align and this like beam shoots down that reveals the Titans' location. And I was like, did the Olympus gods know that the planet aligning beam shooting thing is a thing? Should they like, you know, maybe like be on, you know, threat level orange or something?
Instead of just like chilling?
Yeah, because they are very much chilling when this happens.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. It's very odd.
So, but yeah, they get beaten pretty quick, put in chains. And Hercules is busy getting beaten down on Earth, and so Meg has to go get Phil, who is, you know, heading back home after having an argument.
Yeah.
And so she talks Phil to come back, and he basically cheerleads Hercules' confidence back up.
Yes.
Who through rope and fire, defeats the Cyclops.
Hooray!
So, yeah. But because of that, because of the Cyclops being giant and falling off of a cliff, this pillar almost kills Hercules and Meg sacrifices herself.
Right.
Which, this is where
this breaks the contract so that he has his strength back again.
Yes. And so I really like that Meg is, you know, Meg's like, you need to go and
fix things.
Save Olympus.
Don't think about me, the gods
and he's like,
are in trouble.
I can't leave you, and Phil is like, here is a rock. She will lay her head on this rock, and
rock
I will
pillow.
Take care of her.
Yeah, that looks
like a rock is so uncomfortable.
I know, that makes things even worse.
That's
so,
just like a debris piece from this ruined town.
Yep.
So yeah, this is on to Olympus. Meanwhile, Hades reveals that he is behind the whole thing. The clouds totally change allegiance.
It's
they
true.
Are as fickle as hunchback crowds. Because these clowns are like, okay, we'll make you a throne, but it'll be creepy.
That's the best comparison. These clouds are as fickle as hunchback crowds. Yep, it's true. Hercules comes in and he frees all the people. And for some reason, they're much better at fighting now. I don't know why. And he frees Zeus and everybody.
Moral stuff.
So
there's a bajillion great one-liners in this fight.
That's true.
All of them are from Hades, but except for one where, because Pegasus gets to come in, and he fights Pain and Panic for having, you know, traumatized him earlier in the film. And so Pain is trying to talk his way out of it, and he says, "My intentions were pure. I really did have feelings for you."
I loved that so much. I was like, what is happening, children's movie? This is just so weird and funny.
But other than that, Hades getting his hair blown out was funny.
Yes.
And the Titans are pretty soundly defeated. They're running away.
Yes.
Except for the Wind Titan, who is the most powerful and awesome of all the Titans, because he is. But not more powerful and awesome than Hercules, who can grab tornadoes.
You know, like you do.
And so he uses that one and sucks up all the other Titans and throws them into space.
That seems like a bad plan, but okay.
Where they... Well, they explode in some sort of nebula.
Which also seems like a bad plan. You don't want to throw off the delicate balance of space. God knows what that explosion did.
I don't know. Maybe it'll keep the planets from aligning again.
That might be good. Let's know more.
Space isn't doing us any favors to begin with.
That's true.
We've already got space problems.
Meg is dying, basically.
Yes. We get this. I've got this swell consolation prize, and so Hercules is hurrying back.
Yeah.
And there was... In 1997, there was this girl sitting in front of me in the theater, and I remember her calling out to the screen at this moment, "Hurry, Hercules!" And I went, "What is he gonna do?"
I just don't understand what he thinks is going to happen. Like, is he going to punch her back to life? Like, I don't...
The only thing that I could possibly think would happen is that if he lifts her up in time, and the little soul piece goes down, and he'd be like, "Nope, count it," and shove it back into her.
Yeah. The other thing that bothered me was before he left Meg, he didn't even give her a kiss. He's never kissed this girl. She might die. He might die. Nope, not gonna kiss her. Okay, bye. Like, dude, just kiss her. That's so awkward. So sad. What if she had died for real?
Well, she did die for real.
Well, yeah, but like, what if she hadn't come back?
I don't know. I mean, I've never left a mortally wounded woman to go and save Olympus. So
seriously,
I don't know what I'd do in that situation.
I think I'd kiss.
So that's still on my bucket list. But Hercules decides like he is definitely gonna take care of this problem. Because he completely knows where the underworld is and has no problem getting there.
Yeah, he's there awful fast.
20 minutes.
Although, like, in his defense, most people in Greek mythology seem to know exactly where the underworld is pretty easily, so I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean it feels like it would be like, you know, some time travel to get there.
I don't know. So he gets the underworld, and Hades is there, and she sees Meg in the giant pool of souls.
This is where he beats Cerberus to round out
his 12
tasks. Hades is still being, you know, fast-talking, wheeling-dealing guy.
Yep.
And so he shows them the souls all in their little soul lake.
Yeah.
He tries to grab Meg's soul, but he can't because...
Sure. Reach it because he'll get all old and die.
Right.
So he decides to offer Hades a trade. If he can get Meg out of the pool, then he'll exchange his soul for hers.
Right.
So Hades is like, sure, I mean, you'll die getting down there, but whatever. So he dives in and he grabs Meg, and as soon as he grabs Meg, he turns into a god, so he's able to pull her back out. And then, you know, Hades can't take his soul if he's immortal, so...
Yeah, there's this cute little scene with the Fates trying to cut Hercules' thread of life. And, nope, can't do it.
Yeah.
And it also, it really messes up their scissors, which I thought was a nice touch.
I thought that was funny.
But then there's this really nice little end bit where, you know, Hades is still trying to basically talk his way out of this situation.
So he pushes
and Hercules
him in
has
this...
none of it.
And he pushes him in the pool of souls, and the souls, like, basically try and eat him.
Yeah, I guess the souls don't care for him. I don't know if he, like, just doesn't treat the souls very well.
I think that was the implication. Like, earlier on when he was on the boat and the River Styx, there were a couple of souls that, like, tried to, like, reach out to him, and he just, like, stomped on their faces, basically.
Set them on fire.
Yep.
Except he's also a god, so, like...
He can't die. I mean, he's not gonna be stuck down there for all eternity. That,
so I guess
that'd suck.
Souls just have to take turns, like, hanging on to him.
Yep.
So he can't get up out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And so, yeah, Hercules comes back, puts Meg's spirit back in her body.
And
she comes back alive.
Goes to Olympus.
Yeah, they are taken by lightning cloud up to Olympus to be welcomed. He welcomed back home as a god.
And then he's like.
So here's the thing. He gets up to Olympus.
Yes.
The gates open. All the gods come out to greet him. Yes. Only the 12 gods can live on Olympus. Except there are a lot more than 12 people lining those stairs. There's like a good 50, 60 people. So I don't know why they all got to usurp the only gods can live on Olympus thing.
No.
And Hercules
did. Okay, Hercules gives up his godness to be with Meg, and I'm like, I don't think you know how godness works in this universe, because plenty of gods are totally dating or involved with non-gods all of the time. I don't understand.
I don't know. But yeah, he does. He gives it up, and everybody's really cool with it.
Yep.
And so they got to sing about it.
Yep. So it's A Star Is Born, isn't it?
Yeah, and Hermes plays keyboard for it, because Hermes is voiced by Paul Schaefer, who plays keyboards on Late Show with David Letterman. So,
I had no idea. I knew the voice sounded familiar to me. I guess that's it.
That's why, because if you leave CBS on too long, you start to hear it.
It's true.
And so, I really like this ending, because, like, we get to everybody, like, comes to...
See,
we get a little epilogue for everybody.
And
like, his parents come back. They're all happy. You know, Phil gets his wish of a hero he trained being in the stars.
Yeah.
We get to see the little complaining group. And the cat that they have, the snowball, the cat, is decked out in, like, Hercules merchandise. He's got, like, the sneakers and the shirt on.
Yeah.
And so
it's a nice little ending party scene.
Yeah. It's everybody's happy at the end. And we get the... You get this, you know, fun song over the credits, and then we get the standard ballad.
Yeah,
which is sung by Michael Bolton this time.
One is not quite as bad as previous.
Because it's sung by Michael Bolton.
Well, partially because it's sung by Michael Bolton, and also there are no, like, weird synthesizers involved or anything, so that kind of helps. But yeah. So. I really like this movie.
I like this movie a lot. It feels kind of not overlooked, because I think everybody does like it, but...
But it feels a little bit underloved. A little bit.
It's one... I think it might be, like, line for line, the funniest of the Disney movies.
It's up there for me. It's definitely in my top three. I don't know that it'd be the funniest, because I really love Emperor's New Groove, but it's pretty high up there.
Yeah. Well, this one, like, Emperor's New Groove, too, though, like, it is so much more concerned with, like, humor and, like, you know, these specific jokes.
Rather than being so much involved with the romantic fairy tale idea, it's about a fun story and being funny and interesting character personalities meshing together.
Yeah.
I love Meg. Meg's one of my favorite Disney ladies.
I think she's really
sassy and fabulous.
I love Hades.
Hades is an amazing villain.
Yeah.
He's funny while still being scary. Like, there's a lot of points in this movie where it's like, I really would not want to be around him at this particular moment in my life. But he's still so funny.
I do wish Hades would have sung a song. Hades doesn't get a song.
No, it's true.
And he is the first Disney villain since Oliver and Company to not sing.
Huh.
So
he should get one of those like fabulous Doofenshmirtz numbers with the dancing showgirls. That's what he needs.
The Fates can back him up.
Seriously. Like, I would watch that.
Yeah. So he does sing in House of Mouse.
Oh, does he?
There's an episode where he falls in love with Maleficent. So
that's a pairing.
Mickey has to teach him, or Mickey tries to teach him how to be nice and woo a girl.
I don't think Maleficent wants nice.
That's the thing. Like, he finally loses his temper and gets angry at all these failed attempts, and Maleficent's like, "Wait a minute, you're a mean guy."
I like mean dudes.
So yeah, that's funny. It was a cute episode. But yeah, this movie is one that is just entertaining.
It's really funny.
We've talked about earlier, especially with Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, how they feel timeless. They feel like my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids will all have the same
experience.
Feel. Yeah. I don't know if that's the same for Hercules. Humor changes over time.
That's true. And there are some references that are definitely going to be a little bit dated by that point. But I think it's a charming movie, and I really like all of the characters. There's like no one particularly like annoying or anything like there sometimes is in movies. Tinkerbell. I was like trying to think of a Disney example. I was like, oh, I know a Disney example. So I don't know. I really enjoy this movie. And if you haven't watched it in a long time, I know a lot of people that I've talked to about this movie have not seen it in a while. It's not one of the ones that people like look back on and are like, oh, I should rewatch that movie. But it's still really like a very delightful movie and totally worth the rewatch.
It is. It is one because there's so much just like joke. There is so much stuff for adults and
I
think that now that I get all of the jokes instead of just some of the jokes,
it might even be funnier.
So definitely watch this one.
Still a little disappointed about that Spice Girls thing.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, but now that I know, every time I watch it, I'm gonna be like, that could have been the Spice Girls.
Could have been the Spice Girls. Next week will be Mulan, I believe.
Yeah. Expect us to actually podcast. Expect us to just cover Be a Man for 12 hours. That's what we're going to do.
I'm so excited. I am. I say right now, I am going to have that.
We're gonna sing.
Repeat that song a couple of times when watching.
Oh, yeah.
It will take 12 to 15 extra minutes to watch that movie.
Yeah.
On account of repeated viewings of Dark Side of the Moon.
Man, I'm super excited for Mulan. I love Mulan.
Yep.
Okay.
So, next time, Mulan. Until then, bye, guys.
Bye, everybody. A star is born. It's a time for pulling out the